Australia is here. We'll stay here. We're committed to being with Papua New Guinea at this time and into the future.
Through the PNG Australia Partnership, we have a long collaboration with the government of PNG in health.
Sport is such a powerful tool at so many levels, but definitely at the community level.
Align our work to PNG's strategic frameworks and plans in the education sector.
Dispela Partnership, Emmy Strongim Sindown Naman Australia na PNG.
Gender inequality compounds the most pressing global development challenges. No country can meet its development goals without ensuring all its people have every opportunity to reach their full potential. This month on AHG On Air, we focus on gender equality and the 20 days of human rights activism. Internationally, the campaign is recognized as 16 days of activism against gender-based violence and kicks off on the 25th of November with the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Here in PNG, we recognize the 20 days campaign as starting on November 20th with World Children's Day and running through until Human Rights Day on 10th of December. I'm your host, Amanda Kundil. Glad you can join me. Every year, the United Nations Unite campaign focuses on a specific theme, and this year's global theme is Unite, Invest to Prevent Violence Against Women and Girls. The campaign calls on all citizens to show how much they care about ending violence against women and girls by sharing the actions they are taking to create a world free from violence towards women. This year's campaign also calls on governments worldwide to share how they are investing in gender-based violence prevention. Australia is developing a new international gender equality strategy to guide the breadth of Australia's engagement, including how it integrates gender equality throughout its development partnerships and programs. Joining me now are Australia's Ambassador for Gender Equality, Stephanie Culpus-Campbell, and the UK Special Envoy on Gender Equality, Alicia Herbert. Welcome. As the lead advocates for Australia and the UK's work on gender equality and the human rights of women and girls, how are each of your countries advancing gender equality and the rights of women and girls at home, in our region, and through broader international engagement? Stephanie, we might start off with you, and Alicia can give her response after.
It's really wonderful to be in my role as Australia's lead advocate for gender equality. And my mandate comes very much from the fact that Australia domestically leads on this as well. It is such a priority for my country. In fact, our finance minister is also our minister for women. And what that means is from the very outset in our country, we have a gender lens on our budget. And you can see the ways in which Australia, from looking at the prevention of violence against women and girls, to looking at increasing women's participation in the workforce, to addressing issues like care and the ability to access leave for both parents, and all these other aspects of ensuring that our society will move forward to meet our own economic and social goals depends on gender equality. So we really have prioritized that at home. And my role then internationally looks at how we work with countries within our region and indeed in the world to say that gender equality is of course the right thing to do because it's a fundamental human right for every single person to have every single opportunity to meet their full potential. But it's also the smart thing to do. And again, you captured that in your question, but if we don't tackle gender inequality, we're not going to tackle key and critical issues like climate change. We're not going to tackle key and critical issues like security and avoiding conflict. We're not going to ensure that we have healthy and equitable economic growth where everyone benefits. We can only do that when we have gender equality when no one is excluded, and indeed when you exclude 50% of your population from accessing their full potential and contributing, then you're not going to address any of these issues and we're all in trouble essentially. So it's a shared goal for all of us. And in my role, as I engage as ambassador, I really look at ensuring that we have a dialogue around that shared interest. It's never about going to say, you know, gender equality is important because we think it's important. I always go and start with the conversation being, how together can we understand that this is both important for both of our countries or for our region? Why is that the case? What are your own priorities? What can I learn from you? What can I share with you? How can we work together on something that's so important to both of our security, prosperity, and future?
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie. Alicia?
Good. I'm you know, delighted to be here, and thank you very much for this first question. I think that, you know, very similar to what Stephanie has just said, for the UK government as well, issues around gender equality are, you know, central and particularly important to us, both domestically as well as what we project internationally. In terms of our projection internationally, we tend to focus around sort of three big areas where we think as the UK government we can make the most difference, where we can add value to the efforts of other governments around the world and other stakeholders around the world. And those three areas are around education of girls, so girls' education being particularly important for us. The second area is around the empowerment of women and girls, the economic, social and political empowerment, and standing up for their health rights. And then the third area is around ending violence against women and girls. So yes, you know, grounded in a domestic commitment and projecting internationally around those areas of educating girls, empowerment of women and girls, and ending violence against them.
Thank you so much, ladies. We'll take a quick break, and when we return, we will go into the next part of our interview with Stephanie Copus-Campbell and Alicia Herbert.
This pela and one pela big pela talk survey igolongol man Mary. CKSF ikalap igolongol nara pela peles Long Highlands na emken kilimol pik bilong yumi suppose yumi no walking one pela something now. Nokin karim pik long one pela hap igolong nara pela. Nokin karim pik meet long walkabout bilong you. Na banisim all pick belong you. Puti malong all pick na ringim nakia long 1801332 o toksave long all walkman long plus belong you sa pespiki sick o indai.
Tokorai tikam na National Agriculture Quarantine and Inspection Authority.
Australia's support focuses on improving health security and combating other diseases like TB, HIV, malaria, and improving maternal and child health. Opening the Mabuda One Health Centre in South Fly and supporting better TB screening and more effective treatment has been a great success story. Another major joint project for PNG in Australia is the redevelopment of the Engau Memorial Hospital, supporting the refurbishment of the birthing suite. We are supporting communities in PNG and continue to work with the PNG's National Health Plan.
Thank you for staying with us on AHC on Air. We now continue with our interview with Australia's Ambassador for Gender Equality, Stephanie Copus-Campbell, and the UK's Special Envoy on Gender Equality, Alicia Herbert. Stephanie, in your first trip as Australia's Ambassador for Gender Equality to PNG in August, you joined PNG government and civil society stakeholders for a gender equality roundtable. Would you be able to share with us the outcome of this discussion and the plans to advance gender equality in the country?
I should first note, it was my first trip to PNG as Ambassador for Gender Equality. It certainly wasn't my first trip to your beautiful, wonderful country. In fact, I've had the privilege of working and engaging here for 23 years. But in that trip, we did have a really rich and really insightful discussion with government, with civil society, and indeed with the private sector, who also participated. And it really was a chance to pause and reflect the important role that each sector plays in ensuring that we take forward gender equality, and the fact that if any one partner is not at the table, we are going to have barriers in reaching our goals. So, for example, that central role in terms of government, ensuring that they're setting the policy framework, that they're enabling funding through the budget in a way that is looking at gender equality across every aspect of the budget, that they are able to get the data together so that we know how we can measure progress and indeed where the challenges are in terms of having data. So the government plays such an important role in that policy, strategy, funding, data evidence role, and we need that if we're going to progress. Of course, civil society, really understanding what the challenges are at that grassroots level, being able to bring forward a voice and advocate for those who may not have a voice, particularly at some of these policy tables, to again identify what the challenges are for their own communities and to bring forward the solutions and to keep things on the table and to put things on the table and to ensure that the needs are met in for example an intersectional way. That is such an important role for civil society, and you can see when civil society is strong and when government has a very active role in that policy and funding and is doing that well, transformational change occurs.
Alicia, during your joint travel this week, have you been able to identify how the UK will complement Australia's efforts in advocating and achieving gender equality?
Okay, thank you very much for that question. And look, this is my very first time in PNG and hopefully not my last. But you know what I mean, who better to come with here than with Stephanie, who spent 23 years working on PNG and indeed has a very deep knowledge and understanding of this context. And I think in a sense that sort of mirrors some of the kind of complementarity piece that you're asking me about. So this is very much an evolving thoughts. What has been quite clear for me, and of course I knew this before coming here, but what's been quite clear, you know, traveling this week, is the extent to which and the depth of the investment of the Australian government in PNG and in all aspects of women's lives, you know, be it in the health sector, be it on women's economic empowerment, you know, financial inclusion, etc. So across the board, and real good engagement with civil society partners as well as with provincial government and indeed with national government as well. So that depth of understanding, the depth of that investment is there. So what can the UK potentially bring to the party? And we'll have to think this through, of course, in more detail. But at the top of my head, I think one, there's a piece probably around joint advocacy. How can we kind of really join forces together in support of efforts by various stakeholders in PNG to advance issues that are crucial and important to you? So there's probably something around the advocacy piece there. We as the UK as well, we've invested quite heavily in the evidence piece. So we have a major global investment in what works to prevent violence against women and girls, an issue which is very much at the forefront here in PNG. So how do we bring maybe that evidence to complement the investment that Australia is doing here? We've got major investment as well in what works to get girls into school and for them to thrive. Well, actually to get all children into school, but particularly girls into school and then to thrive in the school system. So again, we can bring that, we can possibly bring that to the party. So, and there's probably another piece where we would probably have to think about niche activities that will complement what you do, because the scale of investment is very different, but they probably will be niche areas. And our High Commissioner is still very new here. She's only 3 weeks old, and Macro, so she'll be thinking that through as well. But definitely, I think, you know, we can think about advocacy, we can think about complementarity in terms of evidence and investment, and then there are probably niche areas as well that we probably want to pursue.
Finally, 20 Days of Activism kicks off this month. How important is awareness and advocacy efforts for each day of this period?
Short answer, exceptionally important. Very, very, very important. And I think the advocacy is important, not only by women and girls, but also important by men and boys as well. And I think all the time, bringing, we've got to bring boys and men into the tent, working alongside and working with women and girls in order to stop gender-based violence. We've got to get to the root causes of this. And so the advocacy, the awareness raising around this, what it means for women and girls, what it means for men and boys as well, and what it means for households, communities, societies, I think it's hugely important. So I would say yes, that's my short answer.
Thank you.
I was just reflecting a number of years ago, civil society actually around the Bellissi Initiative started a walk through during this period through Port Moresby to end violence against women and girls and join forces. And we had the Chief of Defence Force and the Chief of Police and so many different female and male leaders. And it was mainly Papua New Guineans coming together, joining hands and saying, we do not want violence in our community. And whilst we should be active every day against violence, and we are, we shouldn't leave it to 20 days of activism, it's certainly a time where we can come together and have a deep focus on really raising awareness in a way that can then carry forward for the next year as well. And it's an opportunity to really bring men and women, and again, if I could reinforce that point on the role of men and boys, this is not a women's issue. It's not a women's issue. It is everyone's business, and it's essential for everyone. Everyone benefits when we have gender equality. Every single person benefits, from the individual to the family to the community to the business to the nation to the world. We all benefit. And it's that opportunity to come together en masse, to use our voices in a powerful way, to say, this is the right thing to do. No one should have to experience violence. No one. But it's also the smart thing to do, and to remind people of that evidence of why, when you address issues like violence, I was reading some of the statistics of, I think it was 100,000 people a year that are presenting for hospital services. What's that doing in terms of the health staff having to divert their attention to take care of these people and not being able to do other things? What's it doing to the police force when they're having to go on call-outs of, thousands of call-outs every year, and they can't focus on other things? So it just drains resources across every single sector. It puts an impact. What does it do for schools where children aren't able to come in and focus at school because of the violence at home? On and on. You can see every single sector's impact. It's a way for us to come together and to bring forward the evidence of why this is so essential. And we capture attention for 20 days, but then the point is we don't stop there. We keep going every single day until we end violence against women and girls in all of our countries. PNG is not alone. My country, 1 out of 3 women experience this violence. There's no country in the world where this doesn't happen. And it's coming together to say violence is wrong, and across the board, because men, of course, also experience violence. We can't forget that. Men also experience violence. So violence in the home, violence in the community, violence anywhere is unacceptable, and it has a major cost to society. And we can stop and we can reflect on that together.
That was Australia's Ambassador for Gender Equality, Stephanie Copus-Campbell, and the UK Special Envoy on Gender Equality, Alicia Herbert. Stay with us as we take a quick break, and when we're back, joining us on the other side are PNG's very own human rights defenders.
This pillar and one pillar big pillar talk survey igolongol man meri. CKSF ikalap igolongol nara pillar peles long highlands na emken kilimol peak bilong yumi. Suppose you mean walking one pillar something now. Nokin karim peak long one pillar hap igolong nara pela. Nokin karim peak meet long walkabout belong you, na bani sim all peak belong you. Puti my long all peak, naringim nakia long 1801332, or toksave long all walkman long plus belong you, suppose peaky sick or in die.
Tokaraiti kam na National Agriculture Quarantine and Inspection Authority.
Before the break, we heard from Australia's Ambassador for Gender Equality, Stephanie Copus-Campbell, and the UK's Special Envoy on Gender Equality, Alicia Herbert. They gave us an insight into the importance of gender equality and the 20 Days of Activism campaign and how they are advancing gender equality through their engagements. Moving on with the program. There was an alarm in the Papua New Guinea National Parliament in October when MPs were told that gender-based and sorcery accusation-related violence was widespread and much higher than reported. This was heard from NCD Governor Powers Pakop, who presented a report detailing the findings of an inquiry into gender equality policies and institutions, gender-based violence, and sorcery accusation-related violence. From the right to education to equal pay, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights established for the first time the indivisible and inalienable rights of all humanity. This landmark document enshrines the inalienable rights that everyone is entitled to as a human being, regardless of race, color, religion, sex, language, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. The declaration was proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly in Paris on December 10, 1948, and sets out for the first time fundamental human rights to be universally protected. The last day of the 20 Days campaign, 10th December, celebrates Human Rights Day. This year marks the 75th anniversary of one of the world's most groundbreaking global pledges. Joining me now are a panel of human rights defenders across the country who share with us their work as a human rights defender. They include the Executive Director for Voice of Change based in Jiwaka Province, Ms. Lily Besso, Sister Lauren Garasu, Director for the Nazarene Center for Rehabilitation, and Deputy Provincial Administrator for Southern Highlands, Henry Happen, representing members from the Southern Highlands Peace and Good Order Committee. We start off with Lily. Lily, could you tell us briefly about yourself and how you became a human rights defender?
Thank you. I think I became a human rights defender and I'm an activist because of the experiences that I have gone through. I think they have molded me and shaped me to become an activist, and I think that's what I am doing. We had a conflict in my husband's place where in around Heli 1990s, you know, we have to move out of that. We lost everything that we built on. Mm-hmm. And then I just have to take my children and run home to my home province, which is the Jiwaka province. And then we tried to settle down. Mm-hmm. I think one of the advantages was that I was educated, so I was able to get employment and try to look after my children. But the other women that we've had together from the same tribe, they were facing a lot of problems. And then I was talking to them, meeting with them. And then I realized that they were facing much, much more problems than I was, because I was able to earn money and my financial security was there, able to give my children a home. And I came home because of my family and my friends, and my parents were still alive. So they helped me to build our life here in the new province of Jiwaka. And then that was one experience of fleeing from a tribal conflict. And then we were settling down in the new province. And then in 2008, the kid's father, he dropped me and my children. He deserted us. And then because he went and got involved with a younger woman. So then I had this other blow as well from my marital life. And my marriage was breaking and falling apart. So then from that experience, I saw that. And then, like, I was in the community, but there were many women coming to seek my help. Mm. And then I realized that because I was also using the platform of my father, who was also a chief. Was a chief, and he was also helping during the colonial times when the Australian patrol officers was here. He was one of the interpreters and surveyors and all this. So I think I was using this platform to be able to share my issues and my problems with the other women. And then I saw that there was a need to be able to do that work, because there were many more women were in my shoes. Yeah. And I think that's the start of the work of starting to start up the organization and then trying to help other women. I was actually working in my paid job, but I did a volunteering job for about I started way back in 1996, and it was only in 2013 that we got a first lot of funding, and then that's where I left my work and I started working on a full-time with the organization.
To Sister Lorraine, could you tell us what a human rights defender does?
In my work as a human rights defender, I mostly supported women or even people, families, who were suffering from the conflict, who were suffering violence from the conflict. So then after the conflict, my congregation decided that we will build like a rehabilitation center for people recovering from trauma or suffering from trauma, so that we can do rehabilitation work for them on trauma healing. And also in the process of this, we also found that there were women suffering from or surviving from domestic violence, family and sexual violence, women and their children. So then that's how we also started the Nazareth Center for Rehabilitation and started the work on safe houses. And, you know, from those years coming up to now, my work has always been around, you know, defending and supporting women and children who experience violence in their life. And my work has also been like supporting them, but also doing prevention work. Prevention work on, you know, preventing more violence happening to families. Even preventing more violence happening, repeating itself after the crisis. So my work has always been around that. And I do a lot of work on like education, awareness on human rights, helping people to understand other people's rights, also helping people, generally families, to understand that there are rights, but there are also responsibilities that go with the rights. And which means like a clear example of this would be, if a family is suffering from, you know, hunger, but always like I try to educate families that, you know, right, the need for food is a basic right, which means if you are a parents like father and mother, you have to be providing the food for your children, the basic need for your children. And that means even helping them to understand of the importance of working in the garden or growing food to sustain themselves. So I'm just talking, you know, sharing a little bit about my work and why I have been engaged in this work.
Finally, Henry, this year, the PNG's 20 Days of Activism theme is Invest Now to Prevent All Forms of Violence in Our Communities, Play Your Part. Based on this theme, what message would you like to share with people listening to think about?
Okay, with the 20 Days Activism, this is one of our activities in terms of law and justice sector programs. We have engaged the police. There are about three police, about four. One PHA staff and one community development rep. We have actually started the work on the 20 Days Activism. So our basic message is actually to promote peace. Promote peace means we need to end violence, whether it be family sexual violence, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be a society case, whether it be like, you know, people living with HIV, people are actually, you know, stigmatization and discrimination. We need to end all those form of violence. And then we start calling for leaders to actually be partner, and local leaders need to invest in addressing to end any form of violence in the local communities. So it's not about the politicians making big commitment to help reduce violence in the respective communities, but it's about, you know, some local leaders, for example, like if a primary school headmaster can, you know, start educating the school kids to promote peace, or even local pastor can actually, you know, make an awareness in the church to promote peace. And then those, they can do their part. So in that way, they can make investments into the promotion of peace in the local communities.
Human rights defenders Lily Bessor, Sister Lorraine Garasu, and Henry Happen sharing their experience as a human rights defenders and their roles as human rights defenders, while highlighting to us also this year's 20 Days of Activism national theme, respectively. And that's a wrap for this month's edition of AHG on Air. Thank you for your company. Until next time, I'm Amanda Kundil. Bye for now.
Australia is here, we'll stay here. We're committed to being with Papua New Guinea at this time and into the future.
Through the PNG Australia Partnership, we have a long collaboration with the government of PNG in health.
Sport is such a powerful tool at so many levels, but definitely at the community level.
Align our work to PNG's strategic frameworks and plans in the education sector.
Dispela Partnership, Emmy Strongim Sindown, Australia and our PNG.